morning, Charlotte. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
I'm going to read out of this book tonight. My home group is Breath Fresh Air meets Wednesday night at 7:30. And my Friday date is November the 4th, 1988. And if there's one thing I know for certain, I really like getting drunk. The problem with that is after a few years, it didn't work quite so good for me. I didn't come here because I had legal problems or financial problems. I came here because alcohol was kicking my ass. And I didn't know that for a long time. I like to think I drank for 20 years pretty successfully. The problem with that is I drank for 25 years. And the last 5 years got progressively worse on a daily basis. And, you know, the big book tells me that I lost the ability to control my drinking. And I don't know exactly when that happened. I just knew that, you know, I started noticing that I was getting drunk when I really didn't want to get drunk. And I started forgetting where I lived. And I started forgetting where it worked. And I started forgetting I was married. I started forgetting I had children. And alcohol started causing me a lot of problems in my life. I've heard some people say that, you know, something about best day drinking, worst day sober, something. I don't know, but I had a hell of a lot of fun drinking. I really did. You know, I got to do a lot of traveling, financed by sales of illicit substances. But, you know, I managed to graduate from college. I managed to buy into a big corporation. You know, I was a corporate officer. I had money, property, and prestige. Nice wife and two beautiful kids. And, you know, you'd have thought that life was pretty good. Except that at the end of my drinking, I was wanting to blow my brains out on a daily basis. And that's what happens if you're an alcoholic. When I went into recovery, which I knew absolutely nothing about. I don't ever consciously remember hearing about Alcoholics Anonymous or recovery or any of that kind of stuff. But, you know, one of the things I wanted in there really bad was just for my head to shut up. You know, I was, I was drinking, but I wasn't really getting drunk. I was under the influence, but that, you know, 0.2 buzz was not happening anymore. I was going to go somewhere with that, man. I got a lot of drain damage because of a lot of different reasons. And if you got to follow me real close, because sometimes I ask people to help me, like, what am I talking about? And that's not funny. That's serious. That's funny. Anyway, like I said earlier, I really liked being drunk, and I really did. You know, alcohol did something for me that nothing else did. The problem was, as at the end of my drinking, and I'll give you a good example. I went to the Santa Fe station on Friday night and was going to have a couple of drinks, happy hour. And I showed up home Sunday evening, and my wife said, your daughter turned 3 Saturday, Charlie. We had a nice party. Where were you? We had a board meeting once a month. I was one of the corporate directors, and, you know, I'd go to work Monday, and they'd say, we had a board meeting Friday afternoon, Charlie. Where were you? And, you know, I was raised to be a responsible individual, and that started causing a lot of havoc in my head, you know, because I really wanted to be responsible. I really wanted to be a good father and a good husband and a good business partner. The problem is once I took that first drink, I no longer had the ability to determine what I was going to do. It was not a choice for me anymore. That first drink was always followed by a second drink, which was always followed by a third, which was always followed by, you know, I never knew how much I was going to drink or how many days I was going to drink for or where I was going to end up. it's kind of funny. I just talked to a running partner of mine, and we were. He called me. I haven't heard from him for a couple of years, but if he'd have stayed in the program, he'd have had 26 years, and he's got 8 months. But this is the kind of things we did. I got a divorce, and he was going to move in with me, so we went out that night to celebrate. We'd moved all the stuff in the house, hadn't unpacked it or anything, but we kind of got separated that night, and I didn't hear from the guy for 2 years. Somehow, during the middle of that night, he moved to Tennessee. I didn't do stuff quite that exaggerated, but I did stuff like that with my family where I would just disappear, you know, for periods of time, regardless of what my responsibilities were supposed to be. Like I said, you know, once I took that first drink, it was just, I no longer had a choice. The big book tells me that I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows, and I believe that. You know, I have a physical allergy to alcohol. And if you want to know what an allergy is, the dictionary says it's an abnormal reaction to a normally harmless substance. You know, there are a lot of people that drink and nothing happens to them. You know, they go home. If they want to have one drink, they have one drink. If they want to have five, they have five. I've got two friends that are heavy drinkers. I ran with them. But drinking didn't cause them the problems in their lives that it caused me. And that really pisses me off because they're still getting drunk. But, you know, they show up for work. In fact, both of them are retired now, doing great. But I had one of those long talks with my wife, about 2 hours worth, and I made a lot of sincere promises. There's clues to our drinking that we have a problem, and I remember making a deal with my wife that when I was drinking, I wasn't to hold the children. Now, there should be some kind of a clue there that things are going awry. Anyway, I had one of those long talks with my wife, and, you know, she said, very sincerely, you know, Charlie, you're really screwing up. You know, I don't know what they're going to do with you at work. And I was a partner, so they really couldn't fire me. But so I made some concessions and agreements and promises. And the next day, I had to go to Fresno to pick up some parts. And I decided to stop in Fresno or Riverland in Kingsburg on the way home to have a drink. See, I didn't know I was an alcoholic then, and I didn't know I had a physical allergy to alcohol. To me, it was just a matter of intestinal fortitude and willpower, you know, getting my shit together. Well, I stopped in that place and had that one drink, and that drink had a drink, and that drink had a couple more drinks. And I stumbled out, this was about 4:30 probably in the afternoon, and I stumbled out of that place at 10 o'clock. Absolutely had no idea how I got drunk after making all these promises to my wife less than 24 hours earlier. And I didn't want to drive down 99 because I was hammered, so I went down 384, and for some reason I pulled over and I was sitting out there on that country road, and God allowed me to see Charlie as Charlie had become. And what I was a whining, sniveling, piece of shit drunk. And, you know, that's that moment of clarity we talk about around here. And I will tell you to this day, and I've had some pretty dark days in recovery, that is the ugliest, loneliest, darkest place I've ever been in my life. And I went insane for a little bit in that car. I bring new meaning to the word beat yourself up. Because I started slamming shit around in that car and hitting the dash and hitting myself in the face with my own fist. And, you know, it was ugly. I didn't quit drinking after that, but I'll tell you one thing. My drinking was never the same after that night. And I left there. You know, it's funny how alcoholics, we got this ego. You know, I'm sitting there doing all the shit in my car, and all of a sudden I realize that somebody may be watching me, punching myself in the face. You know? So I'm like, holy shit. You know, but anyway, I go home, and I spent the next 6 months proving to myself that I could go to a bar and have one drink and go home. And I will tell you that I never, ever succeeded in doing that. Every time I went to the bar and had a drink, I got drunk. There's no doubt in my mind when I got into recovery that I was powerless over alcohol, which is step one in this program. But I got into that treatment center, and the first thing I consciously remember was this gentleman told me that if you work these steps and practice these principles, you'll never have to drink again. And for some reason, I believed them. One thing I definitely wanted was not to drink. You know, as much fun as I had drinking, where I ended up was just not fun at all. And I definitely did not want to drink. And it says in the book, willing to go to any lengths. I took that serious, and I did that stuff. And, you know, I haven't had a drink since November 4th, 1988, which is a real miracle to me. You know, sitting in there talking to him, we call him case managers in there. He knew me way better than I knew myself. Obviously, he spent a lot of years in treatment and recovery. But he started talking to me about me, you know, and about my family. And I'm thinking, my goddamn mother came down here and told these people all of this shit, you know. Well, she didn't tell them nothing. The bottom line was he'd been dealing with alcoholics for 20 years, and he knew me, like I said, better than I knew myself. He says, you don't have to drink. I said, well, how the hell do you not drink? I have not a clue. And he said, I told you, we'll work these steps. So in this treatment center that I went through, you had to work the first five steps. Well, you didn't have to do anything. I mean, I had my car and my car keys the whole time I was there. But I decided to do this thing. You know, he said, if you do this, you don't have to drink anymore. I'm buying. So I did the first five steps in that treatment center. And I came home. One of the scariest things I had to do was get out of that nice, secure facility and come back to the real world. But, you know, I made the mistake of telling him that I was real worried about coming back to Visalia because I'm a rock and roller here. I know everybody in every bar in five counties. And so he said, you're worried about relapsing, huh? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, here's about 10 assignments on relapse prevention. So, but I did all that stuff. You know, I don't know why or where I got the willingness to take direction because I'd never been that way before in my life. You know, if you told me to do something, I was going to do exactly the opposite. You know, I don't know why that is. When I was 4 years old, I went to New York to meet my dad's parents, or his mom has already passed away. But one of my aunts was teaching me how to do one of these little rhyme things, you know. And at 4 years old, I sat there like this and didn't do nothing until she left. And then I went out and hid by myself on the back porch and was doing the thing, you know. Had an attitude very young. Anyway, I came back to Visalia and, you know, started finishing the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I did. And, you know, things started happening in my life. I didn't have a God when I got here, and they told me that I really needed to try to find one of those. And, you know, it didn't really make any difference what it was, as long as I found something that I could have faith in, or start to develop a faith in. And I was raised a Methodist. I was baptized in the Methodist Church. And I did things like, you know, when I turned 16, my parents started to give me a little responsibility here. Charlie, take your little sister and go to church. So, you know, Redwood High School is the big water tower right down there. Well, I dropped my little sister off at church and climbed the water tower, and the police came. And that was the end of Charlie taking his little sister to work with a car, or to church with a car. You know, irresponsible. You know, things started happening in my life that I couldn't explain. You know, I started getting glimpses of serenity. You know, I would be peaceful part of the time. You know, my head wasn't going off like it used to go off. I'll tell you, one of the greatest miracles that I have gotten in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've gotten a bunch of them, is the fact that my head is quiet a lot. And it wasn't like that for years and years and years. And that's a direct result of this program. of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was working those steps, and my fourth step actually was pretty wimpy, I think. Been around here a long time, and I've heard a lot of stuff. And you know, I committed adultery, and I didn't show up for work, and embezzled money, and you know, pretty minor stuff. You know, I made amends for that stuff, and I made restitution. To me, what separated me, I don't know if it separated me, it really gave me the freedom was the amends steps. You know, because I'm one of those people, I think revenge is better than Christmas. You know, I got a list, and I've been trying to dump this list, delete it, ever since I can remember, of people that did shit to me when I was in kindergarten. You know? It's still there. It's buried back there. It gets farther back all the time, but you know, when I made that list of, they kind of tricked me, my case manager in recovery, he said, I want you to make a list of all the reasons, people, places, and things that caused you to drink. And I said, yeah, okay. Now these son of a bitches are going to find out, excuse my French, all these people that caused me to drink. So, I mean, I filled up about 2 pages of 8.5 by 11 paper. And I said, here it is. And he goes, well, you keep that. You're going to need it later. And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, that's your amends list. What's an amends? You know, I don't know, but, you know, I came back and I worked through that list, one person at a time. And, you know, I was in a big corporation. I was a partner in that corporation. A lot of money went around in that corporation, and it was me against them. I was an odd man out in the family, and they embezzled a lot of money from me, a lot of money. And under the influence of alcohol and sober powder, I planned some pretty vicious, ruthless stuff to these people. Thank God I never carried any of it out, but the point I'm trying to make here is I got to go sit in front of that man and clean up my side of the street. You know, he never understood what this whole thing was about, me making my amends, you know, but I walked out of that office freer than I'd ever been to that point in my entire life. And, you know, that's the kind of things that happen around here if you do this program. It's amazing to me. Clarence Snyder, he was one of the first 100 alcoholics, and Dr. Bob was his sponsor. And he talks about working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and after you get through 9, you don't have to work them anymore. And boy, let me tell you, if you tell the wrong people that, the shit will hit the fan. But the truth of that is, he's right, and I don't argue with him because he was there when they were writing the book. What he says is you work the maintenance steps, 10, 11, and 12, on a regular basis. And the end of step 12 says practice these principles in all our affairs. And there's a principle that goes with each step of the 12 steps. And so if you're practicing that principle, you're really working that step. So, you know, it's a matter of semantics, I guess, whether you're working the steps or not. But, you know, as long as you're doing something, and I got to tell you, I do something every day. I mean, I don't even have a choice. It's just I've been here long enough where it's natural for me. I do something that has something to do with recovery all the time, every day. You know, I didn't know how to pray when I got here. I didn't have a God when I got here. I started praying in the shower because I didn't want my 2-year-old to see me. That's pretty egotistical, don't you think? But, I was going somewhere with that too. What were we talking about, Alan?
Well, praying and shower.
Well, finding a God, you know, you know, like I said, I was raised a Methodist, and, you know, that God is not somebody I'd want to hang around with. You know, if you do wrong, you're going to hell. I don't want to go there. But, you know, I found this God, and it's really kind of scary, my God that I have found in this program, because I've had some things happen to me. A lot of you people know about some real serious health programs, And I've realized how God works in my life and how He doesn't. And it's just my personal opinion, but you know, you come to realize how really powerless you are over just about everything. And it can be scary. But you know, I have that faith. I've developed that faith when I got here. By the way, faith is the principle of step two. Oh, excuse me, step three. Step two is hope. My God, and I learned this in church, the only thing He really promises me is life ever after. He doesn't tell me I'm going to be rich and famous or peaceful and happy while I'm here. He just says if I believe in Him, I'll have life ever after. Happy, joyous, and free. Well, that leaves a lot of room for a lot of bad shit to go on. And good stuff too, you know, but one of the greatest gifts that God gave me was free will. And I told a person this, that God's not going to keep you sober. And I thought they were going to, they didn't really take that very kindly. And I said, from my experience, because God gave me free will, if I want to have a drink, I'm going to have a drink. I mean, I proved that over and over and over. But see, I realized today that my God can take the obsession for me to drink away. And if I don't have that obsession, drinking is just a passing thought. I don't have to act on it. I've come to find out, as long as I've been here, that most of my problems stem off of my compulsive obsessive behavior. You know, whether it's something you did or something that didn't go my way or something, it's a problem because I keep thinking about it. I start obsessing about it. And that's how God works in my life. I simply ask God to remove this obsession. And man, it's worked. You know, it's amazing to me. My case manager told me, with the drinking thing especially, he says, if you have a thought about drinking, you need to do something about it immediately. Not wait till your prayers at night or when you go to a meeting at noon and it's 10 o'clock. He said, you need to address that issue now. You know, ask God to remove that obsession immediately. Those things fester. You know, I got stuff running around in my head. If I don't do something with it, it starts causing problems. You know, but I've had a little psychology, and they say that when we get thoughts in our head or act, you know, things have happened to us and everything, the normal individual processes those things, and they get stored in the right place in our brain. But if you don't process them, they just keep rattling around in there, and they cause problems, and eventually act on them, like that obsession to drink. You know, I need to tell on myself. I need to do something to get that thought filed away where it's supposed to be so it doesn't rattle around in my head and drive me nuts. Because I don't have far to go already. You know, miracles happen in this program. I know, you know, we talk about that all the time, but that's the truth. You know, I used to make me sick when I'd come around here in the old times and say, keep coming back, get better. Well, it does. You know, I celebrated 20 years in November, and it's getting better. And it continues to get better on a somewhat regular basis. You know, the power of this program is limitless. And I can tell you that from experience. A little over 2 years ago, I was sitting in the hospital, and the doctors told me I had 7 days to live. I was in complete liver failure. And that's a pretty ugly place to be. But you know, because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, drinking did not even come into that picture at all. Which to me is, you know, I mean, drinking is what I did. You know, what the hell difference would it make? Nobody would blame me for getting drunk if I was going to be dead in 7 days. What the hell? But you know what popped into my head was, if I die sober, I win. I beat the disease of alcoholism. Unless there's alcohol in heaven. And I really hope there is. You know, that's what, if there's never a doubt in my mind that I'm alcoholic, because shit like that rattles around in my head, you know. I was at a meeting when this thought came to me, I don't know, 9 months ago when it was, I talked to Alice about it, but You know, somebody was talking about dying and going to heaven. I'm thinking, I wonder if there's alcohol in heaven. I mean, that's not a relapse because you're dead, right? You can't relapse if you're dead. The great thing today is I get to let that stuff rattle around and go wherever it goes, and it's not a problem to me, you know, because God has taken those obsessions away. And if I have an obsession about something like that, I ask Him to take it away, and He does. Most of the time. Now, you know, sometimes it takes some work. It's like amends. You know, I make amends all the time because I've developed a conscience as I've been here, and I can't let that stuff just go. You know, if I've done something that my conscience tells me I shouldn't have done, it doesn't go away until I do something about it. You know, that's that obsession again. I'm a compulsive, obsessive individual. And I will take anything as far as until I'm dead, basically. I mean, that's what I did with my drinking. Everything, you know, take it to the bitter end. You know, the maintenance steps, I don't think we talk about those near enough. You know, there's, I went through there and I kind of picky and choosy, but I picked 12 action words out of the maintenance steps just because it goes with the 12 steps of alcoholics. There may be more or less, but, you know, I know you've all heard that this is a program of action, and if you don't take that action, you'll take another action, which is to pick up a drink, and I believe that. You know, step 10 says we continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Well, you know, first of all, you have to continue to do something. You have to continue to take an inventory. And immediately, you're supposed to do something about it. You know, I'm like Fonzarella, you know, saying I'm sorry wasn't in the agenda before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, the rewards. When I go tell somebody I'm sorry for something I did that was wrong, I feel good. You know, it's amazing. The messed up part about that is the right way is always the hardest way. You know, it's easy to be a screw-up. It's easy to relapse. It's easy to do all that stuff. It's hard to do the other stuff. You know, is it hard to get straight A's in student or in college or get B's or C's or D's? You know, it's always harder to do the right thing. I don't know why that is. I guess because when we get to heaven, we're going to be happy, joyous, and free forever. So we got to trudge the road to happy destiny while we're down here. I don't know. I just know that the stuff that my case manager told me 20 years ago has all come true. You know, bit by bit, piece by piece. It's like the promises. You know, I learned how to handle situations that used to baffle me. The financial insecurity part, you know, I still got to deal with that pretty regular, but this faith thing, you know, I just understand that, you know, whatever happens, it's going to be okay. You know, I dealt with that at the hospital. Even if I die, whatever happens is going to be okay. I was okay with that. Not that I really had any choice, but, you know, you get a, when you go through something like that, you get a real lesson in acceptance. Kind of slam dunk in your face. But, you know, they put that book together, and I believe that that book was written by divine intervention. You know, I don't think anybody could have written a book that worked so perfectly for alcoholics than is the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's just incredible how accurate that thing is in dealing with my brain, anyway. You know, Carol says, my disease wants me dead, but it'll settle for drunk. And, you know, I really haven't had the desire to drink in a long, long time. But those thoughts still rattle around in there. You know, they say that, you know, you're always chasing that first drunk. You know, I believe that. Trouble is, I killed a bunch of brain cells that first time. You know, we used to laugh. Well, I was from the hippie generation, and we did a lot of outside issues, and we used to laugh about killing brain cells, weeding out the weak ones. You know, I'd really like to have a few of them back now, but that's probably not going to happen. Anyway, if you're new here, you know, give this thing a chance. This thing is so easy to do, Well, no, let me back up there. It's simple. It's not easy. It's simple. How you do this thing is all you have to do is talk to another alcoholic. And I seriously mean that. You know, it's just that simple. When I went to that treatment center, we did interviews, like 7 interviews from the different people in that center. And based on those interviews, they wrote a program of recovery for you, a personal program of recovery. And in one of those interviews, for some reason, I knew I needed to tell the truth, but I'm a liar. You know, that's my M.O. But I was trying to tell the truth, and I was lying, not my, you know, what we do. And this girl just interrupted me, and she told me a portion of her story. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. That's the foundation that Alcoholics Anonymous is built on. Bill and Bob did that in the hospital. When Bill went to see Dr. Bob in the hospital, that all started. One alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. They discovered between the two of them that because they were talking to each other about wanting to drink, they weren't drinking. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is based on. One alcoholic talked to another alcoholic. You know, and it says that in the maintenance steps. You know, step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carried this message to other alcoholics. If you're having trouble staying sober, go talk to a wet drunk. If you're obsessing about drinking, go talk to somebody that's... read the obituaries. We just lost another one a couple days ago. Been around here a long time. You know, this disease is a killer. Nobody knows why this stuff happens. Nobody knows how this works. That's why I really grab onto that thing what my case manager told me. He said, you need to act on those thoughts immediately. You know, you got to take care of that stuff because it'll kill you. And it does kill people. But if you do that stuff, you get to be happy, joyous, and free. It's truly a miracle to me. I'm glad I found mercy here, not justice. Because I should really be doing about 40 years in the state penitentiary or the federal prison for importation, distribution, sales, and everything else that goes along with that fresh fruit. I don't know. Anyway, you know, I'm really glad to be sober. I went to my first meeting back in this, well, probably not my first, but one of my first meetings was at the ranch in Tulare, and that was actually an NA meeting, but a guy I went to high school with was celebrating 13 years of sobriety, and he stood up and said, my name's Larry, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've got 13 years sober. And I just looked at him, and in my mind, I said, you're a lying SOB. But, you know, he had 13 years of sobriety. And... you know, I was going somewhere with that, too. This is getting bad. I'm going to have to start eating celery or something. What's that brain food they got? Anyway, I'm your brain-dead alcoholic. We never get to stop working on this thing. And over the years... like I said, I do stuff unconsciously all the time. It's just become part of my life, and I like it that way. You know, I don't know if I pray correctly. I don't know if there is a right way to pray. I know that at the end of the day, I've looked back, and I've been talking to God a lot during the day. I guess that's my prayer. I understand my God and how He works in my life, and I have faith that things are going to be how they are. I mean, you know, I've learned that I can do my side of the street. That's all I can do. You know, I allow you people to drive on my road the way you drive, the wrong way, and that's okay. I don't know, I'm kind of babbling. I guess we open this up for questions. I got a lot of answers. Yeah. They're the maintenance steps. 10 says that continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. That means, I mean, I do that all day at some point in my day. Sometimes at the end of the day, you know, I just look and see if what I've done during that day. Did I offend anybody? Did I do something that was illegal or, you know, anything like that? And if I did, then as quickly as possible, I need to go clean it up. And Seth Levin says that I try to improve my conscious contact with God on a regular basis, you know, which I do. Praying only for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out. I finally figured that out after all these years of sobriety. God's will for me is simply to try to do the right thing. You know, sometimes I have to go get help to go do that, you know, but that's all He wants. He doesn't want me to write a thesis on sobriety or, you know, make $100 million or anything. Just try to do the right thing. And I try to do that. You know, there's people pray about a lot of stuff. That's one thing I realized when I went through that liver failure thing is, you know, a lot of people told me, well, God saved your life. Well, I don't know. That's beyond my comprehension. I don't think God killed another individual to keep me alive because somebody had to die for me to get a liver. You know, there's a fine line in there how all this stuff works. And after going through that, it's just all about faith. You know, the only thing I can do today is do as good as I can do with whatever situation confronts me, and I got to be happy with that. You know, one of the hardest things, when I first got sober, let's say, you know, somewhere in a 2 to 3 year range, first 2 or 3 years of my sobriety, one of the hardest things I had to fight about staying sober was the fact that I drank and used a very secure, comfortable retirement away. And education for all three of my children went up my nose, you know. That was hard to deal with. But, I mean, it is what it is. It's not going away. I did it. I can't change it. I can go forward from where I am right now and do the best that I can do. That's all I can do. You know, I think that gets a lot of people drunk. And early in my sobriety, I thought about that, you know. Why? What the hell difference does it make at this point? Just like I could have done sitting up there in that hospital bed. You know, if I'm going to only live 7 days, what the hell difference does it make? Well, what difference does it make is I pray for God's will, what He wants me to do. He wants me to do the right thing. And I try to do that. And I need a lot of help doing that. You know, I have several people in my life that I confront on a regular basis or not confront, but talk to on a regular basis about how do I do this? You know, the situation that used to baffle us, they still baffle me because I'm selfish, self-centered. I want it my way right now, and you can go to hell. But that's not the way I'm supposed to do this thing. You know, they tell me my rights end where other people's begin, and I got to try to live that. My case manager made me some guarantees, and I can't remember what they all were, but I can tell you that the ones I do remember have come true. And one of the ones is the first part of step 12. If you do these steps, you will have a spiritual awakening. I believe that. That's been my experience. And having had a spiritual awakening has allowed me to have a psychic change. And what a psychic change is to me is I've been able to change the way I think. Now, I can't change a thought that come into my head, okay? But I can sure as hell change the way I act on them and the way I act on other people. You know, and that's a miracle to me. It's hard to change the way you think. You know, that stuff is ingrained chemically and, you know, in your head. And we're raised, you know, you start learning things before you're even born. You know, the medical people are figuring this stuff out, that your senses, you know, you're accumulating information about how you're going to live your life before you're even breathing air. So it's hard to change the way you think. But, you know, we trudge the road to happy destiny, and a lot of times we're skipping. At least that's been my experience. And carrying the message, you know, like I said earlier, the talking to another alcoholic is the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why this thing works. I've tried to talk to normal people, people in my family, and tell them the kind of shit that rattles around in my head. It don't work, man. You know, they talk about straitjackets and stuff. You know, I don't know why that is. I can't stop the thoughts that come into my head. The only thing I can do is change the way I react to them or act on them. You know, it's crazy. But over the years, I said it before, I'll say it again, it keeps getting better. I get better at it. People help me more. I accept advice and criticism more than I ever did. You know, it's crazy, but it works. You know, by everything, we should all be drunk right now. We're alcoholics. Drinking is what we do best. We shouldn't be sitting in this room listening to an idiot like me talk about how he stayed sober for 20 years. You know, but if the obsession to drink is gone, it's not a problem. You know, step one says that I'm powerless over alcohol. You know what? I'm not. The only time I'm powerless over alcohol is when I'm under the influence of alcohol. And if I'm not under the influence, alcohol has no power over me whatsoever. You know, I'm friends with the guys at the body shop down there that I used to tow for, and if I want them to do something for me, I go buy them 12-pack, take it down there, and they drink it, and they do the work I want. It's not a problem. You know, I have bartended in sobriety for people's parties. You know, it's not a problem. I know how to mix drinks good. Anyway, I've gotten all that, you know, working this program, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's by myself, I'm drunk. There is no doubt in my mind. You know, normal people don't wonder if there's booze in heaven. Well, thanks for letting me be a service, and I appreciate tell Bill that thanks for asking me to chair this meeting. Is there any other questions?
What step do you think was probably the most important to you? I know you talked about...
Eight and nine, no doubt. Yeah. You know, alcohol kicked my ass so bad, the powerless under the influence wasn't a problem. You know, coming to believe a power greater than myself, I just kind of let that... You know, I faked it till you make it. I don't know if that's what I did, but it eventually started coming around. You know, came to believe in a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. When I started looking back at my early recovery, you know, I was a diehard daily drinker every day, one day, and the next day, I didn't drink, and I haven't had a drink in over 20 years. Now, that's not me. There's something there that had to do with that. That's way more powerful than I am, because I gave it my best shot trying to not drink. And how do you go from being a drunk one day to being sober the next day is a power greater than me, I'll guarantee you. You know, I finally found a God. My view of God has changed over the years as I've gotten sober. You know, things are different. And I think that's, I hope it's growth on my part, you know. I think way different than I did when I got here. You know, it's incredible. Thank you. You guys are lucky. Anyway, I guess I'm done.